Americans have an abiding affection for the British at their most British. Julian Fellowes is the soul behind the PBS hit Downton Abbey. He's also its sole writer for 6 seasons, and he wrote every one of Maggie Smith's lines in the show.
Why do we never see him?
Oh, Harold hates to leave America.
Curious. He hates to leave America. I should hate to go there.
But Fellowes not only went to America, he's managed to understand it better than most.
Piano man, front and center. You ever played keyboards?
No, I only play piano.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Try this out for me, okay? Just give this a try on my count, all right? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. Yes.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, now touch me, babe. Ba-da-ba-da, can't you see that I am not afraid? Shaka-ka-ka.
He grasped, for instance, that this bit of Americana yearned to be an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical.
Stop. That's perfect.
Webber thought Julian Fellowes was perfect to write the book for Broadway's School of Rock musical based on the Jack Black hit movie. When I spoke to Fellowes before a live audience in the WNYC Green Space this week, he spoke a lot about America and how culturally it often tries to outdo the old empire. For instance, American formality, we often forget, he says, beats the British hands down in the old days.
America in the 1870s, 80s, 90s was very, very formal. I mean, they had more costumes for different activities than even the British. And they lived this extraordinary regulated formal life. I mean, like Newport, where they would build, you all know, the so-called cottages, which are vast houses, but unlike England, vast houses with no land. They would sit in 10 acres.
And tennis courts.
Huge houses with tennis courts and all the rest of it, but essentially no estate. But in those lives, I mean, they would go to Newport, in theory, for their sort of summer holiday, but that holiday you'd be in white tie every night at a banquet eating off gold plate with a footman standing behind your chair, far more than at that time in England. And so people, you know, the Duke of Marlborough, whatever, came out to marry Consuelo Vanderbilt, you know, the terrifying Alva Vanderbilt's daughter. And I mean, he was absolutely amazed at the splendor of Newport, and he lived at Blenheim. I mean, so America's now have this tremendous thing about informality. And they always say, oh, don't let's wear a tie, you can take that off. Yeah. I mean, that's quite recent.
Right.
When I first came here, when I was 21, and that was in 1970, you always had to pack a dinner jacket because at least 3 or 4 things while you were here would be black tie. But now I'm not conscious of having put on a black tie in the last 15 or 20 years for anything except awards dinners, you know, Emmy night and that sort of thing. But never at a private dinner anymore. It probably means I'm moving in rather humble circles.
So where are you in the hierarchy?
Of course, the British press has only basically got 2 pasts for you. Either you grow up in a palace with 27 servants,
right,
or you grow up under a sheet of corrugated iron somewhere on the M1. They don't really have anything in between that. But most people are in between that. And, I mean, I came, I suppose, from the sort of bottom of the top. We didn't have much money. My grandfather was a younger son. And what, in a way, gave me a sort of look at all this stuff, which I think I'm more aware of now. I don't think I was at all aware of it when I was younger. But my father came from one of those families, you know, a minor one, but I mean in the books. And my mother did not. My mother was the daughter of a civil servant and came from a perfectly respectable middle-class background.
But how dreadful for you to have to grow up
and
with your mother as the daughter of a civil servant.
I now know that my father's family couldn't stand her. And they thought she'd caught him. She was very, very good looking. And I don't know whether she caught him or not. I mean, they were very happy. What else matters? But my father's aunts and things would always sort of freeze when she came in. She wasn't part of the gang. She wasn't part of the club. And I think to be honest, looking back, I think it caused a degree of unhappiness over the years. And my father was a diplomat, and then he went into Shell. And a lot of that involved being posted to Egypt, where I was born, to Kenya, where my brother was born, and then eventually my father was head of Shell in Nigeria. And for my mother, these postings were paradise, because she got out of it. She got away from the whole English game, and she could just be who she was. I mean, I loved my great-aunts, and one of them was the model for Violet Grantham, and also for Maggie Smith's character in Gosford Park. You know, she was very tough, but she was hard. She was hard on my mother, and I know it.
Is Cora's story in Downton a bit of your mother's revenge, in the sense that she's not in the book, but because she has American money, she can basically trump
the slights? No, I wouldn't say that. Cora was a different thing. When you marry a foreigner and you agree to live in their country, a man or woman, you are going to have foreign children. You are going to have children of a different nationality to you, and they will have different prejudices and different assumptions. And I think it's quite testing, that. I think it takes quite a large personality to be comfortable being a foreigner their whole life. I always admire it, because I don't think I've got it. I came to England, I lived in America in the early 80s for a couple of years. I had a nice time. I lived on the West Coast. I got a certain amount of work. It was fun. But in the end, I felt I was always having to explain myself. Do you know what I mean? Explain, in the modern phrase, where I was coming from. And I just got tired of it. And in the end, I was getting more work in England, and I went back. And so it left me with a lasting admiration for people who do that and who make it work for them. And also, I wanted a character at the center of the story, or more than one, who could be in the middle of it, but critical of it, and not dyed in the wool. And by putting an American wife into the whole thing, I had a character who initially, she kind of accepts it all, and she sort of sucks it in, but every now and then she sticks up for her own values. But as the world changes and moves actually nearer the America of her own youth in the 1880s, she becomes more outspoken, because she is more in tune with the changes that are happening than her husband is.
And so if there was some giant cricket match or softball game or, you know, soccer game between the cast members of Downton Abbey, and on one team was the staff, and on the other team were all the royals and heiresses and people in the book, what jersey would you wear?
No, I can't see myself as much of a Jersey man.
Come on, really. What team would you be on?
Which team would I be on? No, I'd be the umpire.
Julian Fellowes is the creator, writer, and executive producer of Downton Abbey, which is about to begin its final season. If you're dreading the end, not to worry. He has a TV show about America's first Gilded Age in the works. And in the meantime, you can catch his musical adaptation of School of Rock on Broadway. And here's something to take with you today. 3 weeks ago, gunmen killed 5 victims at Café Bon Beer in Paris. But today, patrons filled the tables lining the sidewalk cafe once again. It's the first of the Paris terrorist targets to reopen. Manager Audrey Billy told the BBC, quote, "We're going to start again to bounce back. We've carried out some work and repainted the walls to wipe away the signs of this nightmare." Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.